It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So right now, it might be a really good time to find out how your breakfast is sitting with you, because we're going to talk about bizarre medical remedies and ailments found in the medical journals from centuries ago. Thomas Morris is a journalist and medical historian. He's based in London. His first book was A History of Heart Surgery. His new book is called The Mystery of the Exploding Teeth and Other Curiosities from the History of Medicine. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. Hello.
So you've spent countless hours paging through these really old medical journals dating back hundreds of years. Somehow this has become your livelihood. You eat, sleep, and breathe this. Why are you doing this work?
Well, it started off as a sort of bit of light relief from my first book, the book about history of heart surgery. And I spent a lot of time when I was writing that book sitting in libraries reading these old medical journals. I remember I was researching the history of how heart disease used to be treated in the 19th century. And I kept stumbling across these kind of weird and wonderful little stories, which are sort of on the opposite page to the article I was meant to be reading. And I kept getting distracted and reading these really strange tales of amazing injuries that people had suffered or unusual treatments that they'd undergone. And I found these stories so gripping and also fascinating, just learning about how, you know, a physician would treat a really bad injury in the 1820s or some of the strange things they thought were medicinal back then. I decided to start collecting them. So it became a little sort of hobby. I put some of them on a blog, and I've been collecting them for about 3.5 years now.
Well, we know medicine evolved from a primitive state, and experimentation kind of was the way to make advancements. And you've collected hundreds of stories now, but how do you curate them? I mean, which ones do you latch onto and which ones do you let go of?
Well, I mean, the ones I like to hold on to, the ones that I prefer to write up and the ones that I've included in this book, are the ones where they have some entertainment value, but also you learn something from them. And the ones I don't really bother with, I mean, there are a lot of cases which are kind of extraordinary, but they're also so sort of you know, tragic or horrible that there's not very, very much fun to be had in thinking about them. So my favorites are the ones where there's some really strange, bizarre circumstances, and yet you can still learn a huge amount about how medicine's evolved just by looking at how a doctor would have gone about treating it, say, 100 or 200 years ago.
Well, let's get into one right away. You recount the unfortunate predicaments that patients find themselves in and what doctors do to help them. And one of the predicaments involves this boy who honked like a goose after accidentally inhaling a bird's larynx. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is some of these stories, you read them and you think that can't possibly be true just because it sounds so outrageous. This one does sound outrageously ridiculous, but it's so ridiculous you couldn't have made it up. It was a case from rural Germany in the early 19th century. And the doctor who described the case said that he was called to see this small boy. And apparently in this village, the children were in the habit, when somebody had slaughtered a goose for eating it, they liked to kind of blow through the neck of the goose to kind of make a honking noise. And I don't know what exactly had happened, how this had come about, but somehow he'd managed to inhale this kind of section of goose throat. Mm. And the goose's larynx was now inside his throat. So every time he breathed, it sounded as if he was a goose. He was honking like a goose.
So he had it lodged in his own throat.
Yeah, I mean, a very dangerous situation. I mean, you know, all joking apart, he could easily have suffocated and probably would have done so without any sort of medical intervention. And the doctor was able to basically perform a tracheotomy to open up the front of the throat and to extract the goose's larynx that way. And, you know, looking at it from another angle, it was actually a very competent and, you know, resourceful piece of surgery at that date.
And tracheotomies today are still performed.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's essentially the same operation. And, you know, these are done by paramedics now on the side of the road sometimes. But yes, they understood the principle of doing a tracheotomy back then. And in this case, I think the patient was fairly lucky in that they didn't have any effective means of controlling infection, no antibiotics, no drugs like that. So they were reliant on just a bit of, you know, basic hygiene to make sure that infection didn't set in. But this boy seems to have made a complete recovery.
We are on a tour of medicine's weirdest and wildest medical cases from hundreds of years ago. These are genuine medical accounts of mysterious illnesses, operations, questionable remedies. How about a prescription for crow's saliva? Medical historian Thomas Morris's new book is The Mystery of the Exploding Teeth. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What bygone medical remedies are you curious about? Did you have a relative who was treated by an old school doctor in a way that would never be permitted today? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll continue this conversation ahead here on The Morning Show. The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Medical historian Thomas Morris has scoured old medical journals to unearth hundreds of mysterious maladies and crazy remedies for ailments we have the cure for today. He's compiled dozens of them in his new book. The book's called The Mystery of the Exploding Teeth. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about an age-old remedy? What fascinates you about medical history? Do you know of a bizarre medical story that you want to share? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Thomas, you spent some time in your book on the concept of bloodletting and how bloodletting has evolved. And oftentimes, I know when I think of old medical treatments, the first thing I think of is bloodletting. So what do we know there?
Oh, well, it has a very long history. I mean, at least 2,000 years. It originated in the ancient world. I think that the ancient Egyptians and certainly the Indians and then Greek and Roman medicine. Certainly from the ancient Greek period, it was based on the idea that human health is basically the result of balance between four humors. It was called the humoral theory. And that you could get an imbalance between these, which was a cause of illness and disease. So bloodletting was one way of kind of bringing these humors or these fluids back into balance. And that persisted even after the Renaissance, when the idea of the four humors started to go out of fashion. So in fact, as late as the 1890s, there were British doctors recommending bloodletting for various diseases. They had various methods of doing it. I mean, the most dramatic was venesection, which is where you open a blood vessel to let an amount of blood out. But of course, there were also others like leeches, which could be applied basically all over the body in any quantity, from just one or two leeches up to sometimes dozens at a time.
Were leeches also put on open wounds?
Not as far as I'm aware. Okay. I mean, they have subsequently been used for that to sort of debride a wound, to get rid of the sort of dead tissue around it. There were other methods as well. I mean, there's one called scarification, which involved very small blades, which would just kind of scratch the surface. And then you'd use suction cups, like cupping, to pull the blood out. So they had these kind of, you know, endless varieties on the basic idea of bleeding. And it persisted for centuries.
Let's bring in Mark now, joining us from Bloomer. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. You see, I wouldn't believe that this happened if I didn't see the paper in my hand. My great-grandmother, at the turn of the 20th century, my great-grandfather was a pastor in Sheboygan County, and he sent his wife, my great-grandmother, to Illinois, because she had breast cancer, and they took hot plaster and burned her breast off. Mm. And when she returned home, it was like raw meat. But she was so thankful, and her name was in all of the brochures sent nationwide, praising them for saving her life.
Wow, what an incredible story there. Thomas, what do we know about treatments for cancer, like breast cancer?
Oh, well, that was, I mean, that is an amazing story. That was sort of the peak period, the early 20th century, for really radical treatments of breast cancer. I mean, if you look through the older journals, it was an absolute scourge. I mean, of course, it's a terrible disease and still is. And thank goodness treatments are getting so much better for it. But the idea of radical mastectomy and the idea that the whole breast had to be removed reached its sort of the peak of its popularity in that sort of period, the early 20th century. And so there was a surgeon in this country who pioneered the operation, and then also in the States, in Johns Hopkins in particular, I believe. So there was a sort of terrible period in I think the 1920s and 30s where a lot of surgeons believed that it had to be as radical as possible, and they used to remove not just the breast but the structures underneath it and the lymph nodes right into the armpit and everywhere else. I mean, actually, Siddhartha Mukherjee, who's an oncologist who's also a very good author, has written a fantastic book about this. His biography of cancer. But thank goodness the drugs in particular are what have made, I think, the greatest difference in the last 50 years or so.
18th, 19th century medicine was questionable. There are some stories that require a pretty strong stomach, particularly in the surgical suite. Without modern drugs, there are stories of patients who are saved by really creative doctors. The book is The Mystery of the Exploding Teeth. Medical historian Thomas Morris stays with us. You can join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. These are genuine medical reports, strange stories that have gone dormant on the pages of old medical journals. Medical historian Thomas Morris has collected more than 400 stories from the journals of early medicine, and he stays with us. His new book is called The Mystery of the Exploding Teeth, and you can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What medical mystery do you want an origin story for? Is there a medical treatment, even as late as the 19th century, that intrigues you? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Thomas, one of the stories that you recount in the book involves a woman who reportedly vomits up bugs, and this is from a Dublin medical journal from 1824. Can you give us that account? What happened there?
Yeah, it's a strange old story. This is a story from, I think it was reported by a Dublin physician, but it came from rural Ireland. And it was a young woman who started to suffer from some sort of mysterious stomach ailment. And things kind of came to a head when she started to vomit up insects. And in fact, they came from kind of both ends of her simultaneously. And she called them the winged ones. It sounds like something a bit from a horror film. In fact, they came out in various states of development. So some of them were sort of the larvae, things like sort of mealworms or something, and then the others were adults, and some of them were sort of in between, and they were produced in huge numbers. Now the doctor was at first mystified by this, but when he asked her what had happened, he got out of her the story that she had apparently she'd lost somebody very close to her. She was very upset, and she spent some time. She used to go up to the graveyard where this person was buried, and on one or two occasions spent an entire night there in the rain and the cold. And the doctor assumed that what had happened is she'd fallen asleep on this grave. And had somehow managed to ingest these bugs had sort of crawled into her mouth, and she'd swallowed them, and they'd laid eggs inside her. Now, I think it's fair to say this is not how it happened. It's interesting that there's a whole number of these cases. I mean, I've documented one or two in the book, but there are many, many more, where patients claim to have animals living inside them, sometimes insects, sometimes lizards, sometimes snakes. In fact, I've just been reading one about a man in Germany who claimed to have a live an adder, a viper, a poisonous snake, a venomous snake living inside him. And it's actually a kind of old folk tradition. Sometimes doesn't actually have anything to do with medicine at all. It's fair to say that none of them is true, because it's just physically impossible for a snake or a lizard or an insect to live inside the body. And in fact, this woman showed signs of quite a profound mental distress. Today, I think it's fair to say she would be diagnosed with some psychiatric disorder. And because the key thing is, the doctor never actually saw these insects for himself. They were always presented to him kind of in a glass jar or something. So he didn't actually have any good evidence that was what had happened.
You know, we know that humans are resilient, but it's really easy to forget just how resilient. And when I read your story of Thomas Tipple, who's impaled by the shaft of his buggy, it goes under his armpit, comes out the back, but he lives. What happened in this story, and how resilient are we?
Oh, yes. Well, this story was very famous for a time in the 19th century, because it was a kind of extreme example of what the human body can undergo and still survive. He was driving himself in his horse and cart to see a friend. And when he got there, the boy who worked in the stable, who would normally have helped him take the horse off the cart, wasn't there, so he decided to do it himself. And just as he had managed to get the horse uncoupled from this cart, it got startled and drove the shaft of this thing straight through his chest, and it went in one side of his rib cage and came out through the other. And he was very lucky that somebody was walking past and heard his screams and was able to help him get off this sharp piece of wood. And it must have passed through at least one of his lungs, possibly both. And yet he was still able to walk up two flights of stairs to be put to bed upstairs. And he survived. He was, I think it's fair to say, not in terribly good health for a few years after that. And he didn't live a full lifespan. I think he survived another 15 years or so. And when he died, there was an autopsy performed, which found that it had made this kind of terrible hole in his rib cage. And for a time, his skeleton was actually on display in the Museum of the Royal College of Surgeons here in London as a sort of medical curiosity.
Well, I'm sure autopsies in that day were really important, because physicians were just starting to understand really how the human body worked.
Yeah, I mean, just as they are today, doctors still learn from autopsies, I think. But yes, and the autopsy reports from even quite early periods are fascinating, and often they're so detailed that it will allow you today to reach a diagnosis, even when that diagnosis eluded the doctors. There's one actually, which I mentioned in the book, from 1637. You know, this is almost 400 years ago. And the doctor who performed the autopsy then had no idea what had killed the patient. But I showed this autopsy report to a cardiologist, who was pretty clear that he thought he could reach a diagnosis today just on the basis of what those doctors had described almost 400 years ago.
Thomas Morris is a writer and medical historian based in London. His new book is called The Mystery of the Exploding Teeth and Other Curiosities from the History of Medicine. You can join in with your questions. Do you know of a bizarre medical story that you want to share, perhaps trace its origin, its history? 800-642-1234. Thomas, as I was reading your book, it struck me that, have you ever been to the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia?
No, I haven't, no.
This is a museum that is filled with old medical journals, and it is curated by the Physicians of Philadelphia. And it has, for instance, I just went on its website yesterday and has, you know, eyeballs on display now and jaws. But, you know, it's like Liberty Bell or eyeballs. What should I choose? But I was just thinking about how that your book really curate some really interesting things about medicine, and this museum really does the same thing. So I think that if you're ever across the pond, you should find your way to this museum.
Well, yes, and actually there's one case in the book which I think I mentioned, the Mutter Museum in the book, because they have one of their exhibits is called the Soap Lady, I believe. And this is a woman whose body has apparently been turned to soap, which is an unusual phenomenon called adipocere, where if a human body is buried in just conditions that are just right, that rather than decomposing, the flesh can turn into this kind of strange soapy substance. There was another case which I've written about from New York at around the same time of when the contents of a cemetery had to be moved because the plot of land it was sitting on was being redeveloped, and they found this basically corpse that was, which had just been, it looked sort of intact even 10, 20 years after it had been buried. So yeah, the Mutter Museum does play a passing role in the book as well.
So the title of your book, The Mystery of the Exploding Teeth, we naturally need to get this backstory. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a case from, well, it was reported in the 1850s, but it sort of started 40 years earlier than that, from a dental journal. It was a journal called Dental Cosmos, which I think is a great title for a journal. and it took place in, in Springfield County, Pennsylvania, in fact. And this single dentist encountered three similar cases. But the first one, which took place in 1817, was a priest, a clergyman, who developed this excruciating toothache. There's a great description of him walking up and down the garden of his house, howling like a wild beast because he was in such pain. And nothing would ease this agony until the following morning. His tooth exploded, and the description is that it burst with a report like a pistol shot. And it wasn't the only one. There were a couple of other patients. There was one who had a toothache which was relieved only when her tooth burst with an impact that well nigh knocked her over. And another was deafened for some time after her tooth exploded. There's sort of a few of these cases dotted around. And the mystery part of the title is that nobody really knows what caused it. There are various possible explanations. I talked to a chemist who suggested that it is just possible that the chemicals they were using in early fillings in the 19th century, if you'd say had two different fillings in your mouth and they'd used two different chemicals, it's just possible that they might have reacted in some way and caused an explosion. But there isn't a wholly satisfactory explanation, so I don't know really what caused these explosions.
You've read the writing of so many physicians who take down the accounts of their patients. Is there any one of these physicians you would really love to come back to life to talk them, to do an in-person interview with them?
That's a very good question. There is one. I haven't included the case in this book, but there's a favourite of mine who was actually one of the inspirations for Sherlock Holmes. His name was Bell. I think it was Joseph Bell. His first name eludes me for the moment. But he taught Arthur Conan Doyle when he was a medical student in Scotland. And the first time I read one of his cases, I thought this is like Sherlock Holmes, and it really was. It was a case of somebody who'd been injured in a fight. And the doctor had concluded successfully that the attacker was a left-handed man because of the place where the wound had appeared on the man's neck. And if you read his cases, he has this extraordinary kind of Sherlock Holmes ability to look at an injury or an illness and deduct things from it that would just never occur to the normal person. So that's the person I choose, definitely.
So where does your history go from here? Are you still gathering these stories? Are you still hunting down medical journals?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sitting at my computer at home at the moment, and I've got 10 tabs of my web browser, all with different stories that I'm going to bookmark and then come back to later. So, yeah, it's still continuing. I've got a big sort of reserve of these stories, which I'm intending to write up and post online or do whatever with, put them in another book, maybe.
Well, Thomas Morris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thomas Morris is a writer and medical historian based in London. His most recent book is called The Mystery of the Exploding Teeth and Other Curiosities from the History of Medicine. And you heard him here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Ideas Network. Stay with us.